Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody will know that if you listen to the old AP programs, that when it got to the saxophone solo, I cut it off, which is exactly what I did then. That is, of course, Ice House with Electric Blue, my old theme from years ago. So a little bit of reminiscing there. Well, I talk about reminiscing because we get into another song. But it's great to be here on the radio today because here in Australia, it is the 12th of June, which is officially AP birthday, so thank you to everybody who has gone and shot in some poems for me to read of either myself, Henry Lawson, or Banjo Patterson. And joining me for this period of a couple of hours of me reading and doing stuff is Hatter. Hi, Hatter. How are you?
Just fine. Happy birthday.
Excellent. Thank you. And, of course, the leader of our great group on allpoetry.com, the team of voices. So if you get yourself to allpoetry.com and orient yourself to the group page of a team of voices, you will come across all of us and the links to the poems for the show and the leader of the group, Deb. Hi, Deb. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I am well. Thank you. I am well. So
happy birthday.
We are. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. It's we've done this show, I think, a couple of times now. We've got started a few shows on the sort of annual program, the Melbourne Cup show, the birthday show, the Australia Day show. You know, we're starting to get a bit of a few shows that happen every year. So that's kind of fun, really, Deb. So we've obviously been doing this for a while if we're starting to get annual shows happening again. So this is good news. So I thought we might start with a Banjo Patterson poem. Yeah? And since it's my birthday, I get to choose. And this poem is a famous poem, actually, because it was sent as an open letter in the newspaper by Banjo Patterson to all of the troops who were fighting in Gallipoli or the Dardanelles in Turkey. And this is, we're all Australians now. And, of course, it goes a little bit like this. Australia takes her pen in hand to write a line to you, to let your fellows understand how proud we are of you. From shearing shed and cattle run, from Broome to Hobson's Bay, each native-born Australian son stands straighter up today. The man who used to hump the drum on far-out Queensland runs is fighting side by side with some Tasmanian farmer's sons. The fisher boys drop sail and oar to grimly stand the test among that storm-swept Turkish shore with miners from the west. The old state jealousies of yore are dead as Pharaoh's sow. We're not state children anymore. We're all Australians now. A six-starred flag that used to fly half shyly to the breeze, unknown where other nations ply their trade on foreign seas, flies out to meet the morning blue with victory at the prow. But that's the flag the Sydney flew. The wide seas know it now. The metal that a race can show was proved with shot and steel, and now we know what nations know and feel what nations feel. The honoured graves beneath the crest of Gabba Tepe Hill may hold our bravest and our best, but we have brave men still. With all our petty quarrels done, dissensions overthrown, we have, through what your boys have done, a history of our own. Our old world differences are dead like weeds beneath the plough, the English, Scotch and Irish bred, they're all Australians now. So now we'll toast the 3rd Brigade that led Australia's van. Never shall their glory fade in mind, Australian. Fight on unflinchingly till right and justice reign. Fight on till victory shall send you home again. And with Australia's flag shall fly a spray of wattle bough to symbolise our unity. We're all Australians now. End poem.
Awesome.
And so.
I think that the I'm trying to find it. See that? I hate when that happens. The part of where they're realizing that they're all that they got their own country, that find it.
Yeah. Well, it was only 15 years after Australia came together. Australia was only Australia in 1900, and this was 1915. So it was a relatively small period of time after.
And I found it. The metal that a race can show is proved with shot and steel, and now we know what nations know and feel, what nations feel.
Mm.
I think that is the most powerful of it all. We know. We finally know what the other nations feel.
Come to my attention that Benjo Patterson did not play the banjo. He adapted the nickname from a family horse. Horse of family.
He did. He did. So, I think it's a really good poem. But I've got mine. This is a reprise written by me of We're All Australians Now. And it goes a little bit like this. A country battles upon a land, replacing a culture grew, of genocide bought as fanned without respect or treaty too. Over beaches near the setting sun to the sands of an outback way, yet to recognise injustices done, so how can we stand today? Of hundreds of nations aligned some, language of dreaming runs, skirmishes with spear and drum against those firing guns. By battles all over death's tour, as the invasion stressed, onward the settlers full bore, this really was not a contest. Until those peoples left poured to the edges of lands not sown, they were removed from our core as remnants of history known. While they sit today in prisons nigh or depart too young on breeze, part of ourselves lost in the sky, we slowly wither by degrees. Taken injustices to history accrued, combine reflections we craft, as terrible overseas events brew, can see the wheat from the chaff. Time to reach out and make it right. Deep inside, we know how. To finally settle upon a treaty. Then we can all be Australians now. End poem.
Hmm.
awesome.
So was there an actual war, the Aborigines?
Not formally, but the settlers just basically went out and killed thousands upon thousands of people, had her over time. Some of that was done with guns, much of it was done with smallpox, tuberculosis and diseases that the local people had no answer to. So yes, there were guns and armaments and skirmishes, but it was the diseases that killed the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, and it's the diseases and lifestyle factors that still kill those people today. So we really haven't done the right thing and put a treaty in place. The closest we were was probably 20-odd years ago, and seems to have got lost from our thinking now for some reason. I don't know why. Shouldn't have, but it has. So it's something we haven't done. The thing I'm very, you know, I think New Zealand would say with the Treaty of Waitangi that they did with the Maori people, they'd say that they had a very flawed treaty. And they're probably right, but at least they had a treaty. And at least they have something they can point to and say that they sat down and tried to do the right thing, at least, even if they didn't. We can't even say that. So we've got a way to go. We've got a way to go. Anyway, that is for me and for others to try and work on, Hatter, and we will. And we will. So,
that last stanza of yours is pretty impactful itself. Taken injustices to history accrued, combined reflections we craft as terrible overseas events brew. Oh, that's not the right one. The last two, it is actually. Can't see the wheat from the chaff. Time to reach out and make it right. Deep inside, we know how to finally settle upon a treaty. Then we can call Australia now. We can all be Australia now. But for the one you read before, there was more of a feeling of finally we know the feeling, and yours is more of a we are so close, why can't we just take it that last step? So I thought that were both pretty impactful there.
Yeah, they're both different sort of ages. One, you know, obviously 100 years between, but an interesting combination of sort of both. So anyway, there you go. I like them both.
Me too.
However, I'm now going to go. So what I think I do probably better than many, and that is when I write poems and I write them for myself, I do an okay job. And when I write them for others, I do a much better job. And I don't know why that's the case, but I seem to. So
Say that again.
I seem to do a better job of writing poems when I'm writing for them for other people rather than myself. I don't know why, but I do. And I like poems more too. I don't know why, but I do. So with that, all of that in mind, I'm going to my most read poem, Deb, on the site, which is
you look a little bit free poem.
Not even short poem. This is camouflaged tree vanilla, and it goes a little bit
this.
As butterflies don't obscure their presence, the night skies then illuminate rare stars. They flutter to and fro by silk wings. See, camouflage would alter their essence. Upon the echo of space hide our scars. Sighted teetering in yard or crescents between the fine aqua and sky blue, hover in sunshine as the warmth sings. As butterflies don't obscure their presence, smallest creatures scuttling too. Within breezes tumbling on the sense, our imagination's limit bizarre. Antennae flicker the sense about things. See, camouflage would alter their essence. The night skies illuminate rare stars. Predators in motion find iridescence between fine aqua and sky blue. There is no venom there or poison stings, as butterflies don't obscure their presence or lounge beneath periwinkle dew. Discover instead a drift is effervescence as we scan ever outwards darkness bars. Avoid adverse currents as all dark slings see camouflage but alter their essence as they look outwards seeking memoirs. In currents glittering absent defence on the sands fine colours brew. Discover joy, here optimism springs, all lounge below periwinkle dew. As butterflies don't obscure their presence, see camouflage would alter their essence. End poem.
This should be called Periwinkle Dew. There's an end poem for you, yeah.
Probably should have. You're probably right. Probably should.
You know, one of the I'm so lucky, and you know, how many times a year can I find a way to get you to read this one? So, like, that was really awesome, and to be the most viewed and a front page pick, and get to hear it all the time. That's really really awesome. Plus, knowing that the pieces of this are pieces from a separate poems that you could read on their own,
yes,
and have read on their own, and then combined into this is even more so. So, like, it's also, on top of all the things I just mentioned, a form that you invented. So it's, like, amazing. Thank you.
It's a fun piece. I love writing Billy Knowles, and it's always seemed to me that you could stack a villanelle together, and that's effectively what it is. It's a sort of double, triple stack villanelle. That's effectively what it is, and it works surprisingly well. Actually, I was quite surprised. Sometimes you try things and you go, "Ooh, shit, I don't know what this is going to look like."
The one piece camouflaged the original one. It is so prominent,
yes,
in this one that it's just like an expansion on that one. So it's a wow all the way around, no matter how you look at it. And when I thumbed through some of the comments, I noticed that a lot of people,
yes,
like the same part about the butterflies don't obscure their presence. I remember the first time you did one of these. It was the first time you did your singing debut, and the line was, or the repeat line was, no false bard scene, and it's the same kind of message. And what's important to me is that the message is the same all these years, and it makes me, you know, it makes me feel very good. So thank you for that.
No, pleasure. It's just a wonderful form, and it just really, for whatever reason, just seemed to really sing and dance beautifully when I started combining it. And, you know, sometimes I have good ideas and sometimes they turn out really well, and sometimes I have good ideas and they turn out really rubbish. And this one was one of the ones that turned out really well. you can be lucky sometimes. But anyway, Patter, you have put a poem on the board.
Yes, I have a second, though. Hatter, you got that little cup next to you?
Yes, I do. I hear a bell.
Bark like a dog and take a shot.
All right. Snaps. Whoa. Okay. Little kicks.
Yeah. I don't think I put an S on the end of that. I said shot.
Okay. This was called Off My Bucket List. Invited to see somewhere new, I pulled it from my bucket list. unknown journeys that went away, and it went something like this. Find papers to show I am and where I am to be. A bug released to kill the world, released to punish me. Who could say it would go this way, and why should it be now? Invited to go fly away, but it stopped it all somehow. A virus called COVID. I'm sick of hearing it all. I'm stuck here on the tarmac waiting for the fall. Sudden changes, rearranges, time that passed me by. Where's the end? If it just begins, no one can tell me why. I sit here thinking, what could have been? To meet someone I call friend. This has never happened before. I wonder what it has in store. Meeting good things comes to those who wait. And I'll just be a little late.
Yeah.
A little late.
I think so, Hatter. Yeah, I think so. Yep. But you just have to wait a little bit, and you know it'll happen. I mean, it's quite a remarkable period. This period, you know, I was talking to one of my managing directors the other day, and saying how we plan for black swan events that are one every 40-year events, but we never plan for anything that happens less than that because it's too rare. And here we are in a 1 in 100-year event. You know, it's just going to go for a couple of years, but effectively it's 1 in 100 years. And we just have to, you know, sort of remind ourselves of that sometimes and say that that's quite remarkable. You know, there'll be books and tomes and encyclopedias written about this couple of years in the way that it's written about a whole heap of different things in history. And but we'll still be here. The place will still be here. The planes will still be here.
Yeah,
it's just a little.
If you're a world leader, and you prepare yourself, let's say you do get a certain number of coffins, and you do have unmanned tent cities waiting for a pandemic. Or another disaster. You're called all sorts of names.
Yes.
I mean, the other side will list you as a mass murderer, and you plan on doing this, and people will believe it. I mean, it's happened before.
Yes.
And all I want to do is be prepared for a bad flu season.
The truth of the matter is, Hatter, it wouldn't really so much matter who was running what. The history will show that they could have run it better, and it doesn't matter who it is.
Always.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's just a truism, you know, that you know, with hindsight comes clarity, but you don't have much hindsight when you're in the middle of it, and you have even less hindsight when you're at the start of it. And so you sort of, you know, it's a truism that it's very easy to be critical, but
it goes on to hate. I think if you're a member of Congress in the United States and you hate somebody and your actions are that you hate the leader of our country, I think you should just resign. We need this but there are certain areas that should not be accepted, and lying and going after the family is over the line, because it's not constructive to the American people or the people of your country. It's not constructive in any way. It's destructive.
I agree with you, Hatter. I think we've had a period where there's been a period where people have sort of thought about, you know, that somehow things could be done better. But the truth of the matter is that it's bloody hard. And I'm actually going to use the words of an ex-American president, Hatter, and that is Theodore Roosevelt in 1910, who went to France.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called the Man in the Arena speech. But the critical words were, it is not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes short again and again because there is no effort without error and shortcoming. but who does actually strive to do the deeds, who knows great enthusiasms, devotions, who spends himself in a worthy cause, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who neither know victory nor defeat. And I think that sums it up quite nicely.
Yeah, and the buck stops here.
Well, the buck stops at the person who's got the job, Haddo, and
and
everybody can criticise, but the truth of the matter is that for some reason they were either voted in or they were given the role for some good reason, and they're the ones that have to go and do what is in front of them with often very, very limited knowledge. And, you know, those people, you know, do their best. And you know, that doesn't mean they get it right all the time, but I think genuinely they do their best. And there's no, you know, there's been no right answer here because nobody's been alive since the last time this happened. And so we're all finding our way. And I think for me, you know, it should just be a general sort of vote of thanks to the people who were there, even if we don't agree with what they did. They're genuinely trying their best and working incredibly hard to do it.
Yeah, you're right. And if you wish the leader of your country to fail, you're an idiot.
Yeah, there's something that. No, there's something wrong about that. I mean, I think I don't care what political party a leader is from. You know, I think there should be enough basic goodwill to at least try to support that person and give them the honour that is given when somebody wins an election, you know, and it just seems that we've forgotten some of those things.
We got to find our way back somehow, I would think. But anyway. Yeah, Teddy Roosevelt was the youngest president when he was sworn in after, was it Harding or McKinley?
Okay.
Harding, wasn't it?
Okay.
Yeah, he was 40 or 41, I think, at the time of the youngest president. And his cousin FDR was watching the whole time.
Okay. So, anyways, I'm now going, Hatter, to something a bit more light. Because, you know, I do like poems occasionally. This one was a request from Frank, a fairly new poem, only in the last couple of weeks, from the Dragon series, Hatter. There's three in the Dragon series now. There's a one I haven't read yet because Sweet's show was suspended for a couple of weeks, but the last one's a beauty. But anyway, this is Scorch, Tale About a Dragon. I like the heading as much as anything else. And it goes a little bit like this. His face was all lined with the precious peridot green. Sparkling scale rose could be seen with a torch. Eyes were violet amethyst, heated to citrine, but any so close soon turned to borscht. As dragons are elegant but also mean, and not for nothing was he known as Scorch. Scorch had a mountain lair with a hall of gold. Its glitter could be seen well down the valley. With horns tapered and sharpened by cold, he would target his foes with first sally. His dragons are elegant, but also mean, while his victims and their helmets did tally. His flames burned by the most grim icy days, while flayed then singed the winter of snow. The raids provided so treasure halls raised, and the tributes piles did steadily grow. His dragons are elegant, but also mean, and his opponents were ever the last to know. End poem. It's kind of fun, that poem. It's kind of and the shaping is kind of nice, you know.
Oh, it's a shape.
Yeah, well, it's got the little cups, you see. Yeah.
Ah, okay, nice. Yeah.
Each stanza is a little cup. It's so cool.
And so, I'm half inclined to do my last dragon poem at this point, Deb. Because I haven't got to read it yet, and it's kind of fun. So it sort of follows on, and it's a hell of a dragon too. Because it's a beauty. Yeah, it's a ripper. I went looking for dragons of different cultures, and I found this one. I was very excited because my mum's family originally come from the Orkney Islands in Scotland, and this is the dragon of the Orkneys called the Storworm.
Cool.
And you should see this image. This is the Storworm. It goes a bit like this. In walls of storm water lies obscured within by power and steel camouflage of the waves. Arriving in anger as around Arctic seas spin whales groaning of those ready in graves. And in these isles far of fishing and sheep farming too, the creature appears off to mar, with death its intention through. Storm upon as ferocious as tossing the waters away, with a speed and intensity arrives on the beach firm. In the wild, tall breakers and gnarled teeth of prey, on the coast of the Orkneys appears the Storworm. While in these isles far of fishing and sheep farming too, creature appears off to mar, as death its only intention through. An appetite huge, fed by whole ships or houses, one eye left aglow with bright green phosphorescence. Destructive force by the dank aroma of louses, body unravelling miles into the waves' crescents. And in these isles far of fishing and sheep farming too, the Storworm appears off to mar, death its intention through. End poem.
The Storworm.
Isn't that a great picture? Love the picture.
Freaky, yeah. She's going to love this. I see that you're so excited by it, you couldn't stand the thought of waiting. I'm just realizing that it's the one from the rain date.
No, I really like this one.
I think it came out great. Storm upon is just as tossing the waters away with a speed and intensity arrives on the beach firm. The details and everything in this are an amazing story. Bring an amazing story. And then there at the end, the death, its intention is like a spooky foreboding kind of ending. So she's going to love it.
It's a neat one. I really like that poem. I haven't had a chance to read it before, so I had to roll it in. But it's really funky. If you're into aggressive nasty dragons, then the Storworm's up and it's right up in the top list. So there you go. So, where am I going next? I'm going to swap to something different, and I'm going to go to my piece that was in the Kevin competition and was completely different, Deb, when you heard it the first time, because
AP.
It was, yes, Hatter, yes.
Do you know the difference between a three-toed and a four-toed dragon?
No, I don't. Tell me.
Three-toed dragons are from Japan and four-toed dragons are from China.
Ah, yes.
So when you see a dragon, just count his toes and you know what...
count his toes.
Yeah, let's walk up and count his toes.
I can see many things that I'm going to do if I see a dragon, but I suspect counting his toes is not going to be the first thing that I'm thinking of, to be honest.
Would do.
Anyways, so...
I'd be running in the other direction. I don't think I'd be seeing any toes.
That's why that line was in the Scorch poem, which sort of said, if you see all this wonderful detail, then you're going to get turned to borscht, which I thought was kind of nice, because it was, beautifully green and ready and pinky and stuff, So, but
yeah,
interestingly, Hannah, that is, in that line, eyes were violet, amethyst, heated to citrine. That's technically correct. When amethyst, purple, gets heated, it becomes citrine, and then it becomes yellow, which is the color of that dragon's eyes.
That is
a technically correct piece of gemstone-ology there. Violet amethyst, when heated, does turn to citrine. That is correct.
Who knew?
Which I think is cool.
Wow. And it seems way off.
No.
Like
it's true.
They're in the wrong color spectrum, but how wicked is that?
Yeah. No. It's true. And that's why it's such a really cool line, because it's actually true, but, you know, apart from anything else. So. Completely switching stuff. I'm going to go to my Pablo Neruda poem, because I really like it, and because it doesn't sound like me. And so this is Wandered Two Foxes, and it goes a little bit like this. My vixen, as we meet on this last night, recalling the times past, with me walking under a wispy, feeble moon, watching a lioness stride a stage with eyes aimed at me. Triangle of a timber child's dollhouse where your naked body could not fit without you bending at the waist. Or nights when your words let my wearied spaces find an accommodation inside your soft frame. Moments of desire expressed in caresses that became our currency as we bartered with the other. Of a chase born which continued across a continent for 5 years. As foxes, we explored various spaces and then with one call, landed back together on one jumbled bed, where, within the flurry, we sampled again the rich tastes and aromas of each other, feasting on those brief moments of intersection, drinking in the other, bruising our skin inside embraces, a collision within lust under stars. Upon the altar of shared lost thoughts entwined, we conquered those rare nights and many of the days that follow. In poem.
On the altar of the shared lost spots. Got to reread this.
And Kevin's comments for the records. Vixen, not sure about this. Fits with Fox, but feels strange for an unintroduced lover. So it looks like a strange comment, really. Of me walking, I walk. Yeah, I can see that. Stride on, stride across. Maybe. And a stage, show the stage. Well, I think I sort of did. She was striding it, and that's why it was there. So, you know, I'm not sure how I could have shown the stage anymore. But I
on
anyway,
top of that, I think that he took the beginning where it said, as we meet, as like a first encounter, rather than as you get together.
I think that's correct. Yes,
so I think
correct.
It started out of context.
Yes, he's been literal, Deb. Yeah, he's been literal. I think you're absolutely correct. Yes, I think you're absolutely correct, and that's why he's missed it. Good thinking. Not for the first time, but good thinking. Anyway, it's good fun.
And I think that this one, it's on like 1, 2, 3. It's on 4 lists, and it's got over 1,000 views. And like,
yes.
I remember listening to some of the comments the first time you read this. So I don't know, you know. I think I'll go with everybody else and not worry about that one.
No, I think so. I think he missed it. I was actually really pleased with it, though, Deb, and I was pleased with it because it didn't sound like me, if that makes sense. And I like it. I like it when you come to a piece and you write it and you think, that's kind of neat because it doesn't sound like me, you know?
I think that the inspiring stanza that you pulled it out of you, and on a side note, I think that it would have wholeheartedly fooled Lady A during a Checkmack Po game.
Yes.
Just that.
Yes, I agree. Although that said, I did have a record in my last Checkmack Po game, and that was where we actually had somebody full twice by the one poem, Deb. And I don't think that's ever happened before.
The same piece of it, if I remember correctly.
Yes. So I thought that was pretty funky, you know, so because it was me, and then it was a guess that it was somebody else, and then it was a guess it was Poe, and I was like, oh, wow, okay, that's obviously worked. I need to do more like that.
Bottle that, and here we go.
Yeah.
But speaking of Tic-Mac Poe, I had mentioned earlier that the camouflage was something that you invented, and Tic-Mac Poe is also one of your creations. You invented the poetry game that we play on Fridays now and then, and people are really having a fun time with it. It's nobody more than Lady A, though. She would play every single game if you let her.
Yes, you would. Yes, she's quite enamored with the game, actually. And I think
she's got a system.
She does have a system, and sometimes it works, Hatter, and sometimes it doesn't. So that's kind of fun because I, of course, am trying to second guess what the system is so that I can make it more difficult. And I think I'm getting closer to that in terms of some of the subtlety of what I do, because I have the thing that gives me away often is that I've got a cadence in my poems that is quite distinct. And so
I think that's what she's looking at.
If you look for the cadence, even if it's in free verse, it's still got the same cadence. And so of late, I've been mucking around with the cadence of my poems, and I think that's what's made it harder. Yeah.
I also think that the idea to trickle down the last line of each stanza instead of just leaving it a regular fourth line of a stanza has just enough of a to the eye that gets her too. Just saying.
Yes. No, well, I, as you know, I like things to be perfectly shaped, and I have to get over that when I'm doing Tic-Mac-Poe. But I do like sort of boxiness.
Me too. I try to force myself to not sometimes, but it's kind of crazy, but it feels more unified, neater or something.
I know. It's kind of weird, isn't it? But it is kind of strange. Now, Hattie, you've put a poem on the board. You've got a poem on the board.
Yes, I did, because I wrote one about a dragon. I remember doing that.
Even better.
It's called My Dragon Keeps Me Rich in Gold. That poor dog. It was like this. I failed to be where you could see my dragons in the shop. She's turned a tailored shade of green, and she's feeling really hot. They said she's old and tired, and I should let her go. My dragon lives forever, and I know I love her, so I dress my dragon like a big-ass dog to stretch her legs and wings. I take her to the doggy park so she can do her thing. My dragon loves her mani pedis and straightening her dragon hair. She wants me to take her shopping for some dragon underwear. She leaves me a little nuggets that stay on my back stoop. My dragon keeps me rich in gold every time she poops. My dragon loves to watch the game shows. She watches every day. Now she's volunteered to participate in the Thanksgiving Day parade. I think my dragon's English. I think it might be true. Every time she sneezes, it's coop, coop, ka-choo. My dragon loves red wine at dinner with an imported Gouda cheese. She likes thin-crusted pizza, and it must be gluten-free. My dragon is my own best friend, and I'm glad she's pie trained. I love my dragon very much. I will keep her just the same.
Isn't that beautiful? Very, very nice. And sort of a mix of rhyme and slide rhyme, Hatter, which is kind of fun. And the image is great. I'm very, very fond of the mani pedis and the straightening of dragon hair, and she wants to take me shopping for some dragon hair. I think that's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful verse. No, I don't. It's really very, very clever. So, no, very, very fun. Deb, did you like that one?
I did. I had the other phone died. I had a call back. But yeah, I liked it. The cuckoo sneeze. I liked it. The little nuggets in the poo as gold. I liked the silliness. I think that the imagery is really cool. That the dragon loves her mani-pedis and straightening her dragon hair. She wants me to take her shopping for some dragon underwear. I learned something new today. I did not know that dragon wore underwear. Really cool.
There you go. See? Yep. 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 So, beautifully done. Beautifully done. Well, you know, you've got to learn something from poems, Hatter, and we definitely learned something from that poem, and that's all you can ask from a piece of writing, I think. You learn a little bit, then you're in good shape, I think. So, I think I've just got the banjo page up. Now, I might do another banjo poem, I think, Deb. And I always have my favourite banjo poems, and as you probably know. And this one is out of the 1895 book, Man from Snowy River. It's actually page 131. It's called Black Swans, and it goes a little bit like this. As I lie at rest on a patch of clover in the western park when the day is done, I watch as the wild black swans fly over with their phalanx turned to the sinking sun. And I hear the clang of their leader crying to a lagging mate in the rearward flying, and they fade away in the darkness dying, where the stars are mustering one by one. O ye wild black swans, to a world of wonder, for a while to join in your westward flight, with the stars above and the dim earth under, through the cooling air of the glorious night. As we swept along and our pinions winging, we should catch the chime of a church bell ringing, or the distant note of a torrent singing, or the flower-off flash of a station light. From the northern lakes with the reeds and rushes, where the hills are clothed with purple haze, and the bellbird's chime and the song of thrushes make music sweet in the jungle maze. They will hold their course to the westward ever till they reach the banks of the old grey river, where the waters wash and the reed beds quiver in the burning heat of the summer days. Are you strange wild birds, will you bear a greeting to the folk that live in that western land? Then for every sweep of your pinions beating, you shall bear a wish to the sunburnt band. To the stalwart men who are stoutly fighting with the heat and drought and the dust storm smiting, yet whose life somehow has a strong inviting and wants to the work they have put their hand. Facing it yet, oh my friend stout-hearted, what does it matter for rain or shine? For the hopes deferred and the grain departed, nothing could conquer that heart of thine. And thy health and strength are beyond confessing as the only joys that are worth possessing. May the days to come be as rich in blessing as the days we spent in the old lang syne. I would fain go back to the old grey river, to the old bush days when our hearts were light. Those days, they have fled forever. They are like the swans that have swept from sight. And I know full well that the strangers' faces would meet us now in our dearest places, for our day is dead and has left no traces of the thoughts that live in my mind tonight. There are folk long dead and our hearts would sicken. We should grieve for them with a bitter pain. If the past could live and the dead could quicken, we might turn to that life again. But on lonely nights, we should hear them calling. We should hear their steps on the pathways falling. We should loathe the life with a hate appalling in our lonely rides by the ridge and plain. In the silent park, a scent of clover and the distant roar of the town is dead. And I hear once more as the swans fly over, their far-off clamour from overhead. They are flying west, by their instinct guided, and for man likewise is fate decided, and griefs apportioned and joys divided by a mighty power, with a purpose dread in palm.
I say somebody else.
Yeah, it's not me.
This is good.
So, you know, it's not me, but Jesus, a poem. It's a great poem because it talks about the city and the country and the differences between and what actually connects and what doesn't, and it starts with swans and finishes with, you know, the big statement, and it just does it beautifully, naturally, and wonderful rhythm and cadence, and they're always a joy to read, Banjo's poems, when they're well constructed like
yeah.
that, and you know, that is a, to me, a joy to read that poem.
Very familiar at times.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think, probably because we started to hear, you know, I've obviously, you know, gone and sort of read a few on the radio now, and I think people are becoming more sort of familiar with the cadence and the style and what it is that he tries to achieve with his different poems.
I think we're also getting equally as used to hearing you in the style, because I can't say we can all, but I can always tell if you've been sitting around reading, because it comes out
yes.
in you when you write afterwards. And when you're reading, your sense of joy in doing so shows, as well as your admiration for the poet. And I think that's part
yes.
of one of the best parts of listening to you read him is that you genuinely love doing it.
Absolutely. Yes. You know, we'll do so at any sort of drop of the hat opportunity, Deb. So, you know, I just think they're such a sort of such wonderful pieces of writing that they should be shared more. That's all.
Yeah, I see. He goes into that inner rhyme and out of it very
yes.
very smoothly. Here I thought I had created a certain style, and they've been doing that for a long time.
Well, I think each of us have our own styles, had it already. I just think, you know, that Banjo was a one in, you know, 100 year writer. You know, he was amazingly talented at the intersection between the bush and the country, and he was able to write poems that talked about that and do it in a way that made the countryside become accessible to those in the city.
How old was he when he died? Was he 41?
He wasn't actually very old. Hatter, I did a quick look. Because he went from writing poems to try to write novels. He was 77 when he died, so that was probably about the average for that sort of time. But a lot of his best work was done before 1900. Remembering that he only spent about 6 years when he was aged from about 5 to the age of 11 in the countryside, and then he went to the city. So from the age of, you know, basically 11 onwards, he was at Sydney Grammar. And so he had only that relatively short period of about 6 years to actually, you know, have a game those memories, and those were the things that he, you know, wrote a lot of his most famous work off, whether it was Clancy the Overflow or Waltzing Matilda or The Man from Snowy River or Black Swans or whatever. They, you know, he had most of his best work done by the time he was 1900, in the 1900s. And then he went and did some work around the different conflicts that Australia had, where it was the Boer War or World War One, and then he tried to turn himself into a novelist, and really didn't succeed very well. I mean, he was a brilliant poet and an okay novelist, and he did about three novels, and each of them sort of had slightly less impact as each one got released.
Which one wrote about war? More, was it Austin or was it Patterson?
No, it was Banjo, because he was actually driving an ambulance in the Western Front. Yeah, so he tended to write about the war. Lawson tended to write more about, you know, people and positions and.
Reason that he passed away in 41, I wonder what he would have thought of World War II. It had just started.
It was World War II, when that was happening, yeah. So, even then, it was a state funeral, and it was, you know, a very significant event. I think he was really quite something. So now link, interestingly enough, to the Henry Lawson poem, The Man from Waterloo, seems to be broken, Deb, on the site. So I'm going to copy in the link to the Henry Lawson poem that Kay wanted to have read, which is a Henry Lawson poem. And it's the Henry Lawson poem, Patterson poem. So this is The Man from Waterloo, with kind regards to Banjo. And it goes a little bit like this. It was the man from Waterloo, when work in town was slack, who took the track as bushmen do and humped his swag out back. He tramped for months without a bob, for most of the sheds were full, until at last he got a job of picking up the wool. He found the work was rather rough, but swore to see it through, for he was made of sterling stuff, the man of Waterloo. The first remark was like a stab that fell his ear upon. 'Twas there's another something scab the boss has taken on. They couldn't let the townie be, they sneered like anything. They'd mock him when he sound the G, and his words that end in E. Then came a man from Ironbark, and at the shed he swore. He scoffed his victuals like a shark, and like a fiend he swore. He'd shorn his flowing beard that day, he found it hard to reap, because 'twas hot and in the way while he was steering sheep. His loaded fork and grimy halt was poised, his jaws moved fast, impatient till his throat could bolt, the mouth will take him last. He couldn't stand a something tough, much less a jackaroo, the trimmings off, the man from Waterloo. The town he saw, he must be up or else be underneath, and so one day before them all he dared to clean his teeth. The men came running from the shed and shouted, here's a lark. He's gone to clean his tooty, said the man from Ironbark. His feeble joke was much enjoyed, he sneered as bullies do, and with a scrubbing brush he guides the man from Waterloo. The jackaroo made no remark, but peeled and waded in, and soon the man from Ironbark had three less teeth to grin. And when they knew that he could fight, they swore to see him through, because they saw he was right, the man from Waterloo. Now, in a shop in Sydney near the bottle on the shelf, the tale is told of trimmings by the jackaroo himself. They made my life a hell, he said, they wouldn't let me be. They set the bully off the shed to take it out on me. The dirt was on him like a sheath. He seldom washed his fizz. He sneered because I cleaned my teeth. I guess I dusted his. I treated them as they deserved. I signed on one or two. They won't forget me soon, observed the man from Waterloo. End poem.
Wow. So there.
And that,
it's just amazing rhymers.
Yeah.
That is Henry doing banjos, meter, and rhyme. Yes. So that's why it was in response to banjo, because Henry set aside the meter that he would do normally and he wrote like banjo.
That's a tribute in itself, I would think.
Yeah, kind of fun, isn't it? Yeah, no, kind of fun. They wrote backwards and forwards over the space of 20 years about each other and to each other. So,
okay, I know what a jackalope is. What's a jackaloo?
A jackaroo is like a person who's an itinerant worker that goes from shed to shed, Hatter. So, So they don't have a permanent gig anywhere. They just wander around and follow the work. Yeah. Jack of all trades.
I thought maybe you put antlers on a kangaroo, like we do a jackalope.
Yeah, no. Yeah, no, not quite. So I guess we should do a Henry Lawson poem. So that's it.
I have to wonder now if that's where we got that expression, jack of all trades, from your expression, jackaloo.
Jackaroo, maybe. So
I'm a jack of all trades, master of one.
Yeah, I like too, but Henry Lawson was a poet of the people, and one of the great, you know, we had a few little rebellions here and there, and one of the rebellions that occurred in the 1850s was about gold licenses in Ballarat, and it was called the Eureka Rebellion. Basically, the gold was running out, and still the miners had to pay the same amount of money for their gold license, and so they got a stockade or a sort of a rough fort of stuff on the top of a hill, and said, we've done this and we're not going to do any more, and formed a flag and formed a group of people, and they did the Eureka flag, which is a brilliant flag, and this was Henry Lawson writing about it, Australia's forgotten flag. It goes a little bit like this. Oh, the cross of deepest blue with the bright stars shining through, that was raised, my sons, for you, on a skirt of purest whiteness long ago, long ago, long ago, on the field of far Eureka long ago. By the girl that sewed the silk, blue as skies and white as milk, Jeannie Scotland of that ilk, in the hut there by Eureka long ago, years are gone, old lang syne, with a young dead digger sweetheart on Eureka long ago. Oh, the prayer the diggers said with the southern cross overhead, it is whispered by the dead in the graveyard by Eureka, whispered still, murmured still by the shades that haunt Eureka, murmured still. Oh, the brother and mate and the bonds of love and hate are the help that came too late when the diggers marched from Creswick to the dawn. Years are gone, long years gone. Oh, the midnight march from Creswick to Eureka and the dawn. Few and taken by surprise are the mist that hid the skies and the steel in diggers' eyes. Sunday morning in September long ago, when they grapple and they strike with thick handle and pike, 20 minutes freed Australia at Eureka long ago. For the leader won his crown, though the flag was trampled down, for it rose in Melbourne town, oh, it rose in Melbourne city that same year with a clear ringing cheer, oh, it floated high in Melbourne that same year. When the London strikers starved while old England's roast was carved and a loaf held with was halved, and they bore our flag through London wreathed in flowers in the dreary streets of London, brightest spot in those dark hours. They have stained it mongrel red and the stars are dull and dead, the Northern Cross instead. Oh, the blood stained like a red star long ago, long ago, long ago, oh, that red star was a blood stain on the goldfields long ago. We divided, we are cursed by the paltriest and worst party striving to be first, but the shots from far Eureka echo yet, and they rattle round my window in the wet. Flag and banner of my dreams, the time is not as it seems, and the tide of freedom streams. With the spirit of the people over all, we shall raise the bright flag yet ne'er to falter or to forget, and twill go through many battles, ne'er to fall. End poem.
Somebody else.
I chose that one for you to read because I remember a time when you spoke of that flag and your preference
yes.
for it, and
yes.
I thought it would be a nice addition to the list. There was
a
slight sadness in your voice when you read that one.
Okay. Yeah, it's a classic Henry Lawson poem. And it's beautifully written, and there is a sadness in the poem. There's a sadness in the poem of a group of people basically struck down by a professional unit of soldiers that was sent from Melbourne to kill them, and did. There was sadness because it was a sad event, but it's written beautifully well. And it's a classic Henry Lawson style versus a banjo style. That's why I wanted to read it next because, you know, he had his own style, Henry, and he's overlooked a little bit these days. But a brilliant poem.
Yeah, he's got a like a too late. A woe is us type of flavor.
Yes, it does. Yeah, like the time was lost. Yeah, absolutely. And it was. It was. The you know, they talk about they had a whole heap of miners coming to reinforce the stockade that were marching from Creswick, but they're too far away. And so by the time the miners from Creswick got there, there was nobody left for the stockade because they'd all been killed. So it slowly began a movement for change, but there was a lot of people killed for that to happen. So it's a brilliant flag. You're right, Deb. Eureka flag. I far, 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 far prefer Eureka flag, if I can say that again once more, far prefer the Eureka flag than the Australian flag, because of course the Australian flag has, you know, basically stars on it, and it's the British flag, you know. So, you know, what's the sort of point, really? You know, it's sort of, you know.
You know, we have like the Wild West during a certain time. Everybody
yes.
knows what period of time that is. Do you have a term for a certain era?
Not really,
like Wild?
Adam, no. I mean,
not
we,
really.
We, not really, no. I mean, we didn't, you know, the Australian white sort of people didn't arrive here at first by ship till 1787, and then they were states for 100-odd years individually, and then they got together as Australia in 1900, and it wasn't really a Wild West, but it was just more a period of the, you know, Indigenous people sort of getting pushed back from where they were to the outskirts of the country, really.
And they were forced to get
Sounds
some
familiar.
Kind of structured government with the first gold rush when
yeah, well, remember of course that. Yeah, there were gold rushes in Victoria and New South Wales, but the much, much bigger one was in Victoria. And,
yeah.
you know, the Melbourne in 1870 just to give you an idea of size, you know, Melbourne, if it had been in the United States, would have been the fourth largest city in the United States in 1870. It was a huge city, and it was full of people. And full of money from the gold. It was a huge gold rush.
Yeah.
And it only sort of stopped at the end of the 1880s when basically there had been so many people that the gold was gone. So it came and went, unfortunately. Anyway, it was what it was. So, Now, which part am I going to do next? I say to myself. I think I might do the one for Lady A, which is only about a week old, Deb. Because we both did poems in you know, a show not long ago, Hatter, and it was for Lady A, and it was do a love letter to Lady A, and I think she appreciated it quite a lot. She cried to yours, and I think she cried to mine too. So we both sort of managed to do that, so high fives to both of us. But this is Footsteps. It goes a little bit like this. Salt tang as discarded bottles clank while sands gather at her feet. An old gull squawks above, upon her feet distantly frail, beyond the ripples of an incoming tide. Clear air stirs off the bay, her hands seek glass which has been polished by ocean waves. Here the ripples a sigh, air holds heavy distant storms seeking out the coast, with intent to obscure the gathering stars. The shriek of a child lingers brief on the dune as the long grass waves and stutter of a distant zephyr. And she walks the beach calm in the knowledge that she belongs here, and that she will be joined by another who steps in her footsteps long before the beach sweeps them away. End poem.
Yeah.
Definitely gorgeous.
It's a newer sort of style for me, Deb. There's no rhyme there. There's sort of a cadence, but there's no rhyme. But I'm finding different ways to explain and to show places and to do that with free verse. I think I was really pleased with it, just because it was just a bit different. That's all.
I get to read mine, don't I?
Go ahead.
Sorry, Hannah?
I was going to read the one I wrote to her.
Please. I think that's a great idea.
You were going to say something, Deb?
Oh, yeah. I was just going to say, sometimes when you're trying to say something, you just can't do it in rhyme. And
no.
I tried to do free verse, and if I go back and read it later, and it just doesn't feel right, where this one is still just as gorgeous. So you were able to get the feel across without having to rhyme, and that's so hard for rhymers. So it's, you know, more impressive that it's free verse and still so visual and emotional.
Yeah. It's funny. I don't try and guide it anymore, Deb. It's just what comes. And typically the rhyme comes probably three times in four. But the free verse sticks its head up now and again, and it's really quite cool when it does. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it was written like little snippets, and it really did give snapshots of the day and the sights and the sounds of the gulls and the kids on the beach, and it did. You did a hell of a job, especially at free verse.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks, Deb. I put the original flag up, what's left of the Eureka flag. As with the original US flag, souvenir hunters went and started cutting bits off it. Unfortunately.
Because we can. It'd make them cry.
Yes.
We can.
Yes.
I knew this one was going to. Through the Looking Glass, a love letter. I followed you home so I won't be alone. I hope you understand that before I met you, I had not a clue that I could be your man. Simply said, it's in my head that I need a ticket to ride. You can fix with your bag of tricks what's broken me inside. Let each dawn break that promise to make your heart beat as one with mine. And with a touch of glass through the looking glass, I love you till the end of time.
And see, that's had her everyday really? Week, that poem. No, it really is. It's got, like, so many classic Hatterisms in it that it could, you know, the museum sort of piece of Hatter, that poem.
Oh, thank you.
No, it's good.
And
it's just got
I even remember the exact...
You know,
sorry.
No, go.
I even remember the exact moment she melted when you were reading that one.
Mm-hmm.
Marshmallow strikes again. Melted.
Yep.
You melted her marshmallow.
Oh, melted.
Yeah. Well, you were always going to, Hatter. It was just a matter of how long you sat there basting it for before you put the blowtorch on it, you know?
Yeah.
You just sort of continued to
put
the
butter and
oil.
Yeah, I went right for the juggling
the
right,
there, and oil
right from
on.
The get-go.
Yeah. The butter and oil just got piled on. It was just a matter of when the blowtorch got put on and bingo, you know, it was going to be there. So, yeah. I thought, sorry for Lady A, I knew it was coming.
She was blubbering. Sorry. It was quite beautiful.
Well,
yeah,
isn't
it kind of fun,
turn?
Wasn't it?
She must have fallen asleep because I'm surprised. Yeah, I expected her.
Well, it's all good, Deb, because we just keep going. You know, that's the nice thing about this. You know, we sort of keep wandering on and we work it through until we don't have anything else to read. But we've got lots to read still, so that's good.
Absolutely. So, well, in the meantime, you got all kinds of, I mean, Stephen and Kay, you know, they always call, but they are still live as we speak.
Yep.
Let's call them over there.
We can call and say hi if you want to. And we also, like Sweet on Her Way to Florida.
Yes.
Pretty Bird's Not Feeling Well. Lady A probably
fell
asleep, like I said. Dave Prophet was trying to wait up, and then he said he couldn't anymore. He was going to bed. So, I mean, it seemed like everybody sent... Can you tell them happy birthday? Can you tell them happy birthday? So I figured
let me give
you a big, giant lump full of happy birthday wishes from.
No. I'm having fun. So that's the most important thing. So.
Well, just so when they all listen to the recording tomorrow, they know that I really did say it. I don't want them to think I just said and blew them off. So
absolutely.
Happy birthday from from all of them.
No, it's all good. So I should do, if I do Crimson next, I think I've probably done all the ones off the board, and then I can choose, except for Snowy, of course, but I might finish with that. So the one that Kay and Stephen put up was Crimson. I do like the odd colour here and there. So this is Crimson. Goes a bit like this. I raise from the blue to go into red, not needed the shoe. It's about what was said. As all have a thing or something deep that creates a bling with an anger to seep. And then it exudes like a monster heated. No sense colludes. It wants pain meted. And energy rambles within near to touch. Just watch brambles and spikes they clutch. In poem.
Brambles.
Mm-hmm.
Is this
the delicious?
Short but sweet.
That's nice.
And red.
Short but sweet. I like that. Nothing wrong with short but sweet. Nothing wrong at all.
Not at all.
I like short.
And I'm picturing.
I like short.
I'm picturing the horses.
Yes. So. Yes. No, I think that's kind of nice. But anyway, so I'm thinking about which one we do next. step. And I think I quite like this one because the reason I like this one, it was because it was the first time I was back on a plane again, and so I was able to take photos, and it felt like old times, you know. So it's been a long time for me not being on planes, and I'm again in lockdown, so I can't go on a plane, but we'll be back there in a week or so. So there's rivers to planes, and it goes a little bit like this. Serpents, they mingle a strain above ground, while crocodiles single their wishes are drowned. Under light rains, horses' manes flout. Rains arrive in a tingle, spray spatters about. Below is a jingle, drains of rivulets sprout, pouting off shingles, clear dust spouts. Spouts are dropped single, off a slow swirl. Waters intermingle, rivers to plains spill. Free-falling in airs, once-shaped mists, currents compares as clouds desists. Under light rains, courses they rout. Rains arrive a tingle, spray spatters about. Below is a jingle, drains of rivulets sprout, spouting off shingles, clear dust swept out. Stout a drop single, forms a tiny amount, soon left intermingle, rivers to plains count. End poem.
I'm stuck.
I like that. I like that poem. Just got a lovely rhythm.
Yeah.
It just sort of just runs down the page. Yeah. It just there's something about it. I don't know. Just, you know, it sometimes they work, and that one just works. So you know, it's nice when they
being up in the air and being up in the air inspires you.
Wow.
I find it.
Yeah,
it
does.
I find it.
Eddie. Are you kidding me? It's your birthday again? Oh, snap. Here we go. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Okay, so there it is. Now, I got to do my thing. You do your thing. All right, I'll talk to you later on. Get up on out of here. Have some cake or something like that.
Hey, Melvin.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, I was going to say that
becoming half traditional. That is, you realize.
But I always find it fascinating when I hear someone read something for the second time. When I get to the bottom, and it's the same part that stuck out each time. And
yeah.
It was free falling in airs, one shaped mist. Current compares as clouds desist. Under light rains, courses as they rout. Rain arrive in a tingle. Spray spatters about. The feel that visual that the almost feeling the water splashing from the rain.
Yes.
From the mist.
Yes.
I mean, a really really awesome piece. Good choice. And the photo is awesome.
I
look at the colors in there.
Yeah. Look, I love the rains, and it's why I sort of have the name that I do. But that last poem reminds me of an earlier poem of mine, and one that you probably know, Deb, and one that I really like. So I'm allowed to put it on the board because I've got it back from history. So this is Dark Swept. And it goes a little bit like this. A light lime green meadows, grass fluorescent, tails of cattle to oceans, swishing they fan. Their deep baying echoes in grey quarters. Salt water entwines me within sand. Waves as brumbies break over islands, rock thrones hear penguins pining. Cloud storms, jewel green bands, sea lighthouse gold finding. Dark cypress swept blinding on blinking sandstone foam. Dissolves, binding, guide, I'm near home. I'm standing within a cemetery, games in a scent, family pot uncovered as casket plan. Sears, a distant roar echoes over the waters, breeze pries and racks as I stand. darkness gripping by silk fern fronds, shivers overtaking my frozen lining. Darker rule in muddy seep ponds, lighthouse sea, gold finding. Cypress dark, sweat blinding, blinking on sandstone foam. Dissolves, binding, a guide, I'm near home, end poem.
Yeah. There was even a melancholy tone in your voice, especially by the time you got to the end with this one. It's like the closer you got, each vision took you closer, closer, and there you are.
Yeah. It's,
you're
it's,
almost there.
And it's a beautiful technical poem, this poem, without it being technical. Because it rhymes beautifully in the first and second and the fourth and fifth stanzas. And the flow is beautiful, but it's talking about different things. And so I love the technical piece of this poem. And then the emotion that it brings is brilliant. But I just love the fact that it's such a technical poem that I wrote. I think it was really cool. So, there you go.
Thank you, Doc. And you went and got, did you go and get this out of your vault?
Sorry, Deb?
Did you just go and get this out of your vault?
I did. Yeah, I did. I've got, as you probably know, 750 poems in the vault. So,
yeah.
I'm pretty good at
I can't remember. Normally, I can remember when I think I heard it, but this one, I felt like I did. I can't place when, but that it was more of the tone in your voice for this one.
Mm.
And sometimes, yeah. And the title, ooh, Dark Sweat. Okay, so it you don't realize how perfect the title is until you get to the end, and you're like, yeah. So, yeah.
It's kind of neat.
Great job.
It's kind of neat poem. Yeah, it's kind of neat poem. So anyway, I think, Deb, that I might go to the videotape and pick up the only poem at the minute that I haven't read. And for those of you who haven't heard The Man from Snowy River, it's worth noting that this is a 6 minute and 23-second poem, sometimes 6 minutes to 35 seconds, just depends on my phrasing, but somewhere between 6 minutes, 23 seconds, 6 minutes, 35. Yes, Deb?
Hold on, please. I know Hatter hates palindromes, but I kind of wanted to reshare this before you do the last poem.
Oh!
So, like...
You can do that.
Yeah.
You can do that.
I think that my title in this one was a really good omen because it's called Not a Goodbye. I See You Down the Yellow Brick Road,
yeah.
Palindrome. And my thing is, when I wrote this a few years back, almost three now, you were going to go off the site and you didn't. So I'm thinking that titling it Not a Goodbye was a good move
and well,
put it out there in the world.
I did go off very briefly, but then I changed my name and stuff there. So I was only off very briefly.
Well, I think this is even before that. I think this is when you left some place that we used to be because it was written December 17th, 2018.
Yes. Yes,
so,
before that, you're absolutely,
I mean, I really thought you were history, and I wanted to do something that would leave an impression, and nothing's harder than writing one of your palindromes. But then I felt like it just exploded because it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's a 6-stanza palindrome. Who do I think I am?
Well, that's my...
How hard?
Yeah,
I figured I'm going to bring this down.
Christ.
Anyhow.
Yeah, no, no.
Not a goodbye.
Good work.
I'll see you down the Yellow Brick Road. And here we go. Continent to continent, traveling, poet flying high, passing clouds, shape-shifting to touch mountains, blocking sunlight as shine shrouds. Airplanes, limousines, in lunch breaks, writing poetry in Australia, showing you, rhyming, palindroming, and shaping duck-billed platypus and kangaroo. Sharing, teaching, and singing, too. Tones and warming voice of lullaby, wrapped in song, electric blue. Heartstrings say no goodbye. Goodbye, no, say heartstrings. Blue, electric song and wrapped lullaby, a voice warming in tones, too. Singing and teaching, sharing kangaroo and platypus, duck-billed, shaping and palindroming, rhyming, you show in Australia in poetry, writing, breaks, lunch, and limousine airplanes, shrouds shine, a sunlight blocking mountains, touch to shape-shifting clouds, passing high-flying poet, traveling continent to continent, and poem.
Kind of fun, isn't it? The whole idea of sort of reversing a poem is ridiculous, but it's kind of fun when it works, and you've certainly made it work there, which is really kind of neat. And the it is sort of a work of love to do them, and they do take a lot of sodding about, but it's there's something that is very sort of, I don't know, it's sort of, there's a feeling of sort of great elation when you get one to work. And so I hope you've sort of got that from making this one work.
If it's, yeah, like I said, it was cool to have a place to read it again. And I, for one, am really glad that the Not a Goodbye worked. And happy birthday,
yes.
AP.
Well, that's... Thank you. Well, I've been around a while now, in and around, and I do continue to try different things, and that's sort of certainly been to the comfort of the group. And also, you know, the lockdown did help, you know, things like the madly ridiculous shaped poem that I did for Becky, for example, would not have happened if I hadn't been in an induced lockdown for a period of weeks. Because I never would have stuck course to get to something that I was exceptionally happy with, but it just took me weeks. As you probably saw, I think it was about 24 versions or something of that poem, and I was still working on it when I said I was happy and finished, and I still worked on it. So right up to almost the show. So I was been really glad this year that I got that piece done, and I was really glad that... I've tried some more free verse, and I've got some slightly different strings to my bow. Yeah. I think there's some interesting stuff this last year, and I think I've definitely grown as a writer within the group with some of the stuff I've done.
Yeah, I agree. If we don't try new things, why are we bothering? At all, you know?
Yeah. Well, and sometimes you try different things and they don't quite work out, but I'd rather always have a try at them than not. And I think that's the nice thing about having shows and prompts that give you the opportunity to try some different things. And I certainly did try that for the month of April, Poetry Month too, and I certainly try it for the Tic Mac Poe show, where I think is where you probably see the outskirts of what it is that I can do when I write. So it's really interesting to do.
It seems like it would be quite an exercise to go against your natural instinct for writing to try and hide yourself for the game show purpose. It's an interesting theory there.
It is, and when I'm writing the pieces, I have to stop myself because I'll finish with a word and I'll say, no, I can't use that word. I've got to try something else. Or I'll go with a phrase and then I'll get out the back stroke key and get rid of it. So it's really a matter of sort of holding yourself back and really trying some different things. And I think as an exercise, it's a really interesting exercise to try and, you know, write a poem that that people don't recognise as yours.
Yeah, for sure.
So, you know, I think you learn stuff off that. And I certainly do. So, anyways. So with all of that, there is, of course, only one poem that's my favourite poem. And that is probably well known to the team of voices now. And that is, of course, The Man from Snowy River. And it of course, goes a little bit like this. There was movement at the station, for the word had passed around that the colt from Old Regret had got away. And adjoined the wild bush horses, he was worth £1,000, so all the cracks had gathered to the fray. All the tried and noted riders from the stations near and far had mustered at the homestead overnight, for the bushmen love hard riding where the wild bush horses are, and the stock horse snuffs the battle with delight. There was Harrison, who made his pile when Pardon won the cup, the old man with his hair as white as snow. If you could ride beside him when his blood was fairly up, he would go wherever horse and man could go. And Clancy of the Overflow came down to lend a hand. No better horseman ever held the reins, for never horse could throw him while the saddle girths would stand. He learnt to ride while droving on the plains. And one was there, a stripling on a small and weedy beast. He was something like a racehorse, undersized, with a touch of Timor pony, three parts thoroughbred at least, and such as are by mountain horsemen prized. He was hard and tough and wiry, just the sort that once they die, there was courage in his quick, impatient tread. And he bore the badge of gameness in his bright and fiery eye, and the proud and lofty carriage of his head. But still so slight and weedy, one would doubt his power to stay, and the old man said, that horse will never do. For a long and tiring gallop, lad, you'd better stop away. Those hills are far too rough for such as you. So he waited sad and wistful, only Clancy stood his friend. I think we ought to let him come, he said. I warrant he'll be with us when he's wanted at the end, for both his horse and he are mountain bred. He hails from Snowy River, up by Kosciuszko's side, where the hills are twice as steep and twice as rough, where a horse's hooves strike firelight from the flintstones every stride, the man that holds his own is good enough. And the Snowy River riders on the mountains make their home where the river runs those giant hills between. I have seen full many horsemen since I first commenced to roam, but nowhere yet such horsemen have I seen. So he went, and they found the horses by the big mimosa clump. They raced away towards the mountain's brow, and the old man gave his orders, boys, go get him at the jump. No use to try for fancy riding now. And Clancy, you must wheel them, try and wheel them to the right, ride boldly, lad, and never fear the spills. For never yet was a rider that could keep the mob in sight once they gained the shelter of those hills. So Clancy rode to wheel them. He was racing on the wing, where the best and boldest riders take their place. And he raced his stock horse past them, and he made the rangers ring with the stock whip as he met them face to face. Then they halted for a moment while he swung the dreaded lash, but they saw their well-loved mountain full in view. And they charged beneath the stock whip with a sharp and sudden dash, and off into the mountain scrub they flew. Then fast the horsemen followed where the gorges deep and black resounded to the thunder of their tread. And the stock whips woke the echoes, and they fiercely answered back from cliffs and crags that beetled overhead. And upward ever upward the wild horses held their way, where mountain ash and currajong grew wide. And the old man muttered fiercely, we may bob mid that bob good day, and a man can hold them down the other side. When they reached the mountain's summit, even Clancy took a pull, he it well might make the boldest hold their breath. The wild hog scrub grew thickly and the hidden ground was full of wombat holes and any slip was death. But the man from Snowy River let the pony have his head and he swung the stock whip round and gave a cheer. And he raced him down the mountain like a torrent down its bed while the others stood and watched in very fear. He sent the flintstones flying, but the pony kept his feet. He cleared the fallen timbers in his stride. And the man from Snowy River never shifted in his seat. It was grand to see that mountain horseman ride. Through the stringy barks and saplings on the rough and broken ground, down the hillside at a racing pace he went. And he never drew the bridle till he landed safe and sound at the bottom of that terrible descent. He was right among the horses as he climbed the farther hill, and the watchers on the mountain standing mute saw him ply the stock whip fiercely. He was right among them still. He raced across the clearing in pursuit. They lost him for a moment where two mountain gullies met in the ranges, but a final glimpse reveals on a dim and distant hillside the wild horses racing yet with the man from Snowy River at their heels. And he ran them single-handed till their sides were white with foam. He followed like a bloodhound on their track. So they halted, cowed and beaten, then he turned their heads for home and alone and unassisted brought them back. But his hardy mountain pony, he could scarcely raise a trot, blood from hip to shoulder from the spur. But his pluck was still undaunted and his courage fiery hot, for never yet does a mountain horse occur. And down by Kosciuszko, where the pine-clad ridges rose, their torn and rugged battlements on high, where the air is clear as crystal and the white stars fairly blaze at midnight in the cold and frosty sky. And where around the overflow the reed beds sweep and sway to the breezes and the rolling plains are wide, the man from Snowy River is the household word today, and the stockmen tell the story of his ride in poem.
Awesome. You can really zip through that. It, like I said, it's like you know it by heart. Wow. AP, say hi to Crystal.
Hi, Crystal. How are you?
Hi. Hi, AP. Apparently happy birthday.
Thank you. Yes, I'm another year older. Go fig. You never would have thought it, you know. Who would have thought I would have got to mid-50s? Jeepers creepers. Anyway, here I am.
Yep.
I thought it was old at 50, but here I am. I'm getting older still. I'm still here. It's crazy. Anyway, I'm still here.
Well, you know, since you brought up age, you said something that struck me. I guess it was, you know, a month or two, maybe 3 months ago. I don't know. It doesn't matter exactly when it was. But you said, let me quote you correctly, and who'd have thought, oh, you were getting a tooth pulled, and who'd have thought I'd ever outlive my teeth? And that struck me really hard.
Yes.
Obviously, you thought, because, like, you took information and your brain said, I'll show you, and you're still showing.
Yes.
So keep it up. Keep it up.
Yes. No, I actually, you know I've got a degree in mathematical statistics, so unfortunately I have actually gone and calculated how likely it is that I'm here still. And it's sort of like one chance in 1,000. So I just wake up every day very happy I'm here to... You know, I really do.
Well, I'm looking forward to. Although I'm sure you'll find another reason or two during the course of the year to read this again. I'm looking forward to you reading it on your birthday next year. How about you, Heather?
Yes.
Of course. I hope
it's a classic. Heather, it's a classic. It's a classic poem, and. It's beautifully constructed, and it's a wonderful storytelling poem. Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah, and he's so good at it. And you're, I mean, it's like second nature for you when you read him, and it just it makes it. It doesn't seem like it,
He is a very long poem writing poet. But because of that spot on rhyme story and flow, and it just pulls you in and you just don't realize it. And I sometimes have a hard time with longer poems because girl might go by and pull my attention away. And with this, there's something about his style of writing that keeps you there. So I think that's pretty awesome, you know?
Yes. And you probably noticed that, well, I vary my speed when I'm reading the poem quite considerably from verse to verse. So that's just knowledge of the poem.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, you read it like it's second nature, like you're not even looking at a piece of paper. You just sit back and close your eyes and just spew it. That's how it comes out when you read him.
Yes.
Hatter, did you try to say something?
Squirrel.
Oh, yeah, I know. I can't help it.
It's good fun. And interestingly, back in the end of primary school, I got a couple of book prizes as awards for what I'd done, and one of them was the current version of The Man from Snowy River.
Oh wow!
Which is kind of fun. So I've got a version back from, you know, when I was 10 or 11.
I won a spelling bee once.
Aww.
Did
that's
you?
That's awesome, Heather.
Yeah, 12th grade. I won a spelling bee.
AP,
no, well
do you have your...
No,
do you have that poem? Of course
do.
I have
the,
have
do I have
poem.
The book still? Yeah, I do.
Whatever the poem
was I've
got... you just mentioned, do you have access to it?
Which one? Oh, no, it was a book.
Child.
Deb. It was a book that I got. It was just The Man from Snowy River reprinted in 1970, whatever. Yeah, so it was the same book, but it reprinted in that time.
Oh, I thought you said you wrote a poem to it as a youngster.
No. No, no. But,
I hope.
Yes,
hi, Hope. You said, hi, Hope.
Well,
is that what he said? I heard him say it earlier. I had to.
Sorry. Deb.
Yes.
Can I finish with a poem that's not mine?
Sure. Absolutely.
You put it straight up on the board. You've heard this before. This is about 18 months old and goes a little bit like this. Bursts of colour spin out in dizzying circles, transforming a blank slate into swirling galaxies and clouded stars. Within the dark crack between bustling life, she lives, staring out at the world with a wistful gaze. Her eyes were dull, her hair overgrown, her clothes were barely holding on to the last dregs of their lives. Everything she had ever known had left her in the bright lights of their existence as they walked away. But she stayed, living for the constellations she could create. Her footsteps created ripples unlike any others, multicoloured waves spreading across the pavement with every movement. Every dance of each moment was a piece of art of her own creation. Her life was a delicate balance of beauty and hate, almost toppling constantly. Each day was a new challenge to keep the light in her soul, colours in her heart. She was a dreamer, but her dreams were nothing in the grand void that is the universe and the endless ocean that is responsibility. So she wipes away the stars in her eyes and delves into the cosmos, leaving a trail of coloured drops. End poem.
Wow.
Who's she?
Ava. She wrote it when she was 13.
Amazing. She has some of your flair in a lot of these places. Wow. Wow. Like
13.
Father and daughter.
Yeah, that was over at 13, Heather. Yes. She's 15 now.
Did you record it?
No, I actually phoned in on the show and read it on one of your shows, Deb. And everybody thought it was me.
I remember the show. I think I kept I actually physically downloaded the episode because of that, and because I was so blown away by the fact that we all, including myself, thought it was you, and turned out to be Lil A. It was just like, wow.
Yeah, it was A.
Yeah.
So, so look, she's an interesting character, and a great writer, very outstanding illustrator. A wants to be a comic book writer. That's what A wants to do when she grows up. So I said to A that we need to look around the region for the right course for her. And wherever that will be, I'm very happy to relocate so that she can go there. So that's our plan. It's to find the right course for her. She's going to have the marks to get into just about anything. She's 15 now. She's doing final year philosophy, year 12 philosophy at 15. She'll do two subjects next year in second to last year of school, and she'll do four in the last. So she will have done seven subjects by the time she finishes in 3 years' time, the end of high school. So she should be able to get into just about anything.
That's impressive.
Yeah, no, she's a great kid, and sort of, you know, reasonably bright, as you can tell by the write. So, we will do what we have to do to make Ava a writer. Hi, Stephen.
Absolutely.
And so that's all I've got there. I think we should probably say thank you to everybody and shut up shop with a little bit of Electric Blues. So we've got our way through 2 hours.
Hold on one second, though. Stephen's show ended. I believe he wants to say happy birthday. I'm not sure if Kay's with him. Hey, guys.
Hello.
Hello. Happy birthday.
Hello.
Happy birthday, AP. Just pop over and say that.
Yep. Thank you, Stephen. Thank you. Much appreciated.
That's many cool. More.
And Kay, did I hear you too?
I heard.
Yeah, I hear Kay.
I heard.
It was nice. I know I saw you guys were still spitting out poems moments ago, so it's awesome that you finished up enough to be able to call and say happy birthday. Thank you. And you're just in time to hear the exit song.
Yeah, I know.
Awesome.
So, we've got our way to 2 hours, which is quite remarkable, Hatter. I always look at the time and I think there's no way in the world we're ever going to fill in 2 hours. We always seem to. So thank you to Stephen and Kay for dropping past, for Crystal for dropping past, and for all of those poets who set me the task of the odd poem to read. So thank you for that, and it was good fun.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. We're going to go out with Electric Blue, and I might even be able to play the whole song. So here we go. Bye, everybody.
Night.
folks, and I somehow managed to time the end of the song with the end of the episode. So I took the extra brownie points for that. Thanks to everybody for calling in, and we'll catch everybody for our normal show tomorrow. Bye, everybody.
Good night.
Good night, AP. Happy birthday.
Okay, bye.
Night, everyone.
Thank you.